Me and my friend started to learn to wheelie because it was just one of those things. Bored, we had nothing better to do. I got a Stanton steel frame, UK built steel frame. One of the biggest mental challenges I've found with mountain biking is trusting the tires. It's got a lot of fans, this door. This door's pretty famous.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Single Track listeners, and welcome to another Single Track podcast. This week, we're going to pretty much dive straight into one of Hannah's little pet projects here at the podcast. It's the Desert Island Disc Brake series. And this week, we've got a kind of a very, I don't know, unusual, interesting guest. Who is it, Hannah?
So, best known as Jake 100. He is part of the bike life, wheelie, urban riding crew that you might have seen on Single Track World, or you might have seen on Instagram and probably on TikTok as well, if you are a youth. You're just too old, Mark.
Right. Yeah, as soon as you mentioned TikTok, that's it. It's like, that's me out of the equation. So what kind of stuff does he do? What is this urban riding of which you speak?
So people have often seen these riders kind of wheeling around London in particular. And they, as well as riding on their back wheel all the time, they do things like the swerve, which is where you ride towards something and you get as close as possible and then swerve at the last minute. And that might be around a bus, for example, which is perhaps where some of the attention gets caught, because people think, oh, they're weaving in and out of traffic.
Definitely do stuff
that dangerous?
So you could definitely do stuff that we all wish that we could do.
Yes.
That's where we're coming from. So where would people have seen him already? Because we've actually published some stories on this.
Yeah, so we have published some stories on Bike Life, Wheels Up, Knives Down. There's a sort of regular meetup in London that the sort of whole crews come out and ride together, and it's a bit of a festival kind of a thing, really. So there's that we've published some stories on, and he also did a speed record attempt while wheeling down a mountain, and that YouTube video was very popular, and that's on the website as well.
Cool. So we'll stick some links into the podcast notes so that people can go check out some of the stuff we've done. But let's not spoil it all. Let's head straight over to your interview. And
Can I interrupt before you do?
Oh, go on. By all means.
That might have painted a picture of irresponsible and wild youth, that kind of wheeling and riding in traffic and that kind of thing. And actually, I think that a lot of what Jake talks about is the same love of bikes and riding bikes as we all have. And he had a lot of insight into stuff. I was really, really impressed talking to him about how he thinks about things. So
great. Well, take it away, Hannah and Jake.
Hello and welcome to Desert Island Disc Breaks again. And today I'm joined by Jake O'Neill, better known as Jake 100. Hi, Jake.
Hey, how's it going?
All right. Yes. Good, now good. Then, I don't know how much Radio 4 you listen to. You're probably a bit young for Radio 4.
I can't remember the last time I tuned into a radio. Yeah.
So Desert Island Disc Breaks is a shameless ripoff of Desert Island Discs on Radio 4, where we talk through your life through the medium of bikes, and then we wash you up on a desert island or an island. It might not be a desert island, where you'll have to spend the rest of your days alone, apart from the company of a single bike and a helmet and a toolkit and some trail building tools. So
it sounds quite blissful, to be honest.
Yeah. So we'll see where we get to in the chat. I wonder whether you'll be needing a shovel as a trail tool or indeed a road roller, because you're a little bit different to some of the other guests I've had on, in that we're a mountain bike magazine, but we love all bikes, and you ride urban bike life, wheelie, swerve and all that sort of thing. So that's where our readers may have seen you before.
Yeah.
Bit different, yeah.
Just a tad.
So when did you learn to ride, and what was your first bike?
Oh, so I've learned to ride a bike since a kid. My parents had me on a bike since 2-3 years old. And then, yeah, like literally growing up, always loved bikes. My dad used to ride motorbikes, so I'd always see him coming out of the front garden on the motorbike looking super cool and stuff. And then, yeah, we'd just ride bikes, going little bike rides with my mom, my dad, like proper little cute stuff. And then, yeah, as time went on, I got a BMX.
Right. I'm always envious of people that are BMXs, because they always have all the skills.
Right, that was all I wanted. Suddenly it became about tricks. I was an avid footballer on the side. Football was my goal, my dream, my passion. It was, if anyone asked me, what do you want to be when you're older, I was a professional footballer. And honestly, there was a chance I would have made it as a career. Like, there was a good chance with the level I was playing at and the mindset I had and how dedicated I was to football. But there was something about riding bikes that never allowed that career to kind of blossom, because once I got on a BMX, that's when the injury started to come.
I was going to say, it's not good for your knees.
Right? I've had 3 operations on my knee, literally talking about that. But and then, yeah, that's kind of... Like when I started, obviously, yeah, I've been riding since a baby. But when I would say I started riding and taking it real serious was probably teenagers.
Right.
When I was a teenager. That's when I was like riding constantly, meeting all my friends on bikes, with doing little meetups, with just going to the skate park. And yeah, I would say about 12, 13 years old for that.
And so lots of our listeners are more familiar with kind of the benefits of mountain biking, the experiences you get there, and the friendships you make. So what is it about bike life and urban riding that makes you tick, that got you just like, nah, not football, it's bikes?
So once I'd torn my ACL on the BMX bike and I completely destroyed my knee, and football was kind of like, it's kind of in the past already. It's been a year and a half, 2 years of recovering, knee injuries, re-injuring it, getting it back, physio, do you know what? And once that football was out the window and I'm now on a bike and I now haven't got a focus, like in London, like I'm chilling in my local area. And this was now, once I'd recovered from the knee injury and I started riding a mountain bike around my local area and just being out and about and trying to go to the park and be outside and be outdoors, that's when I had a year or two of, you know, getting in bits of trouble and kind of doing the wrong things and being influenced by the wrong people. But then there became a point in that period of me kind of being a bit lost, like no football, not big on education. Like, what do you do as a young person, right? Mm-hmm. Me and my friend started to learn to wheelie because it was just one of those things. Bored, we had nothing better to do. Mm-hmm. So we just learned to wheelie. We saw some of the older guys from the local area. They would wheelie their bikes too. Then started doing like little tricks to it. We got quite good because we were all like, me and my mates, we came from the BMX background. So we had a bit of understanding about the tricks and that side of things. Then for some reason we started posting on Instagram. And then at that point, I'm about 15, 16 when I've started posting videos on Instagram of my wheelies. And that's when suddenly my friendship group and my whole world kind of opened up, because now there was other young people similar age to me doing the exact same thing in their areas.
Right.
But like, you know, because we'd see the older guys wheeling and we'd want to learn, but now where we're younger and we've learned quicker and whatnot, we're connecting over Instagram now. And then my friendship group just became a lot bigger. It meant that it was the first time apart from football where I made friends outside of my local area. And then for me, what that meant is at the age of 16, 17, when my friends are getting in deeper and deeper trouble, you know, making like really wrong decisions and whatnot, I was just trying to go ride my bike and meet up with all these other friends that I made and mm-hmm. film loads of videos and do some exciting bits and get our adrenaline rush and our kind of blood pumping through riding and through tricks rather than all the other stuff that, you know, my friends back in my local area were doing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it kind of just, yeah, it really opened my world and kind of gave me a whole new community that we built together. And yeah, it was a major, major blessing.
So you said it was Instagram that let you kind of meet people outside of the street you're on kind of thing in the first place. So do you think that... think it's like there is maybe there are now, maybe it's grown, but do you think that those kind of community building opportunities or like just being able to see that other people are out there that are like you that aren't on your street, is that like harder in your scene than maybe other bike scenes where you see it on the telly all the time?
Yeah, I think for us, obviously doing the wheelies and stuff, there was no one for us to kind of look up to. There was no one, like when I started wheeling, there was no thing in my head that thought I could make a career out of this, in a sense, right? Because I was like, it wasn't even a thought, because there's no professional wheelie events, there's no professional wheelie riders, there's no, you know, there was no community.
So I guess like historically there was like Hannes Ray and Trials Riders and stuff
but
did that not just
I'd never enter heard your of them. World? I'd never heard of them until I became aware of Danny. And then I still hadn't heard of Hans Ray until 3 or 4 years back when I'm like really in the bicycle industry and scene now. Do you know what I mean? But back in the day, like I was mainly aware of BMXers. I didn't know any mountain bikers. The only guy was Danny McCaskill because his videos were absolutely viral 10 years ago. He was probably one of the first. He was a big inspiration. But even then, I didn't have a trials bike. They're quite expensive. Do you know what I mean? It's not, none of my friends want to do that stuff. Like, so I guess, yeah, wheeling, it was never, like, I had no dreams about it. But then as soon as my Instagram started to grow a little bit and my friendship group started to get bigger and people, more and more new people were kind of reaching out to us, wanting to come and ride with us, that's when I had like a thought in the back of my head, like, okay, cool, like I could probably make something out of this. Mm-hmm. Like, and my dream was always to be working a job and a few days a week riding my bike. Like, it was work 4 days a week, a job, and 3 days a week riding. Like, that
that's
was
everyone's
my dream, right? And yeah, it kind of went way past that, but yeah, we'll save that bit.
That's kind of interesting that I guess the algorithm or the algorithms of the internet have
overcome something that the bike industry has somehow failed to do. Like, somehow the bike industry has failed to speak to kids in London or whatever.
The cities,
yeah. So I guess, so you're sponsored by Collective Bikes, obviously. And Collective Bikes is what, like, a desirable name in the bike life world, and like the riders, that's a brand that they look up to. Are there any of what the brands that I would know that are also making it onto that, like, ooh, that's the desirable list?
Yeah, there's definitely, do you know what it was like before Collective came around, when the scene was still fairly new, and it's, you know, there were no brands, there were no sponsors. It's like there were the bikes that, you know, everyone wanted, which were, when we were younger, it's the Specialized ones. You know, as a kid, Specialized was just like the golden brand when we were younger. And then there's the brands, like a lot of guys like Boardmans, even though they came from, I think, Halfords or whatever, a lot of the kids in London liked Boardmans. A beginner bike that everyone would ride, or a lot of young people would ride, were B-Twins, because of the decathlons in London, or the Carreras. And it's quite funny because I've noticed this thing once where it's like, depending what area you were from, you'd kind of end up on the same bike, because if you had a decathlon in your area, the kids would end up getting B-Twin bikes. If you had a Halfords in your area and not a decathlon, all the kids were getting Carreras. So each area kind of had their own little bike, depending on the bike shop that they were in. But I think now the desirable bikes, there are a lot of desirable bikes, but my bike, the C100, it's the best bike in the world. So for people to desire something else, then, you know, wouldn't be the smartest thing to do. But yeah, the C100 is literally designed for wheelies, and it was the first mountain bike designed for wheelies, so I think that just helps create that attraction. And, you know, it's the kind of go-to bike for if you want a wheelie now.
So what is it about the geometry, or is it the build spec, what is it about it that makes it great for wheelies?
Yeah, so obviously I've been riding different bikes throughout the year. So I had a 26-inch Specialized P Street for a while. I had a Saverson Tough Tracks, which was a 27.5. I had SE bikes, like the big Ripper BMX bikes. I had all these bikes, but I would switch through them all the time. And then I got a cross country bike. I got a Stanton steel frame, UK built steel frame, like. Big, that was Paradise Cycles. Once I got a job in a bike shop and I really learned about bike brands in the industry, the guys there were like, you need to get the 853 steel and what, well, yeah, went for it. And got a cross country hardtail 29er, and I loved it. Like, I thought it was great. It was one of my favorite bikes now. And I was like, wow, from a brand I'd never even heard of, like, before 2 months ago. Got this bike, got quite a buzz from, you know, my followers that ain't wheelie guys, like the kind of older people that follow me were quite hyped that I'd got a Stanton. It was quite cool. And then off the back of that, there was certain things about that frame. I was like, oh, it'd be great if the seat could go a bit lower, like the seat tube was a bit shorter. And it was great if I could have the front end a little bit more aggressive and the back triangle just a tiny bit shorter. So there was little things like that that I'd thought of. And then by some coincidence, a few months later, someone from Collective Bikes reached out to me, and a conversation began about making my own mountain bike designed for wheelies. So we kind of, those kind of ideas and tweaks that I had for this bike that I was in love with then, we then put onto a new bike, done 3 or 4 samples, get some. Didn't like it, we'd send it back, we'd get a new one. I was like, I don't like the gear holes hanging on it or something. We'd send it back, I'd get a new one, and then we came to the final C100. And yeah, the geometry plus the parts that we put on it, I think between that kind of makes it, yeah, the ideal wheelie bike. And now it's sold worldwide, and the kind of, it's gone, it's gone bigger than me now. I have people coming up to me talking about the bike and they have no idea who I am. Which for me is the best thing in the world. It could, like, I'm over the moon walking away when that happens. I'm like, it's like the best thing that. So yeah, it's just, it's been a crazy journey with the bikes.
Well, and I do appreciate that part of the ethos of it as well is keeping it in an affordable, attainable kind of price range as well. I think that's
yeah, because the bikes ain't the cheapest. But there was a, like, I've made sure, and even now with my clothing line, everything I do, because of the community I come from and the people I grew up around, and I know how hard it is for certain young people and whatnot, and, you know, and how unattainable something is when it is just overpriced or quite expensive. It's like there's that side to me that I can't attach myself to something that's a ridiculous price or super expensive. Like, it's just because, yeah, it just doesn't feel fair to everyone, you know, I'm working with or grew up around, or the young people that I'm looking out for, and then I'm just there promoting and trying to sell a product that is just unattainable, that they're going to really want. So I was very keen, and that's why we made the stock model, which, yeah, admittedly hasn't got the best parts on it, but it meant that we can get it to a fair price point. And then that's why we made the pro model, which has the RockShox forks, it has the better saddle, it has the better pedals, and it has those two options there, yeah.
I think the pro model is like, is it about 850?
It's 900 quid. 900 quid now. Yeah. So, after Brexit and all of that, you can blame Brexit.
Happily, yes.
Don't blame me.
Yeah. So I mean, that's still like, that is like the bottom entry point of a lot of ranges in other brands. So
I said my bike can never be more than £1,000. That's what I said. Never. I'd never let them sell my bike for more than 1,000. That was my where I put my foot down, yeah.
Well, I don't want to jump ahead, but I'm going to come back to that in a mo. So,
oh, no.
Yeah. So what was the first bike that you bought with your own money?
My own money? My own money would have been a Specialized P Street. No, Big Ripper. It was a Big Ripper. My first ever wheelie bike my dad bought for me after a motorbike crash. He got compensation. And then it was around the same time I had my knee injury. So I had to ride a mountain bike for physio because I could put the seat high and thing. Mm-hmm. So that was selling some tough tracks. Then 2 years later, 3 years later, I had the first bike storms. I won the first ever bike storms. I won about £300 or £400 from the competitions, from winning the competitions there. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I bought, next day when I bought a bike, when I bought an SE bike, and was one of the first riders in the UK to have a SE bike.
Is it like a cruiser?
Yeah, it's like big bars, 29 inch wheels, one gear. So it's literally like a BMX on steroids. Like,
yeah. Nice.
It was fun, but I cracked the frame and abused it a bit too much, and yeah, moved on from that quite quickly.
Okay. which other riders and creators do you admire or look to when you're developing your tricks?
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So on a like a personal level, like who I kind of inspired by and stuff, it's a weird one because there's like this what I get this question here and there, and my answer kind of it changes I guess over time, because for me building my own style of riding and kind of having my own look to my riding and my whole brand in general, from content, the way my content looks, to the way my Instagram is, to the way my YouTube videos are edited, I always understood you can't just copy someone and try and do the same thing, mm-hmm. right? Like, so what I would do is, and what I still find myself doing to this day is, I take little bits of inspiration from 10, 15 different people, right? So when it came to vlogs, I loved watching Casey Neistat, who's a mm-hmm. big vlogger in New York, nothing to do with bikes, but there were certain things that I loved, his little time lapses and how he set the scene of the kind of the shots of the city and the skyline and stuff. So I'd yeah. take that element and add it into my YouTube video. But then I'd see like a BMXer doing double foot can-can, like with both his legs over the side of the bike. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, all right, let me try and do that whilst I'm wheeling. So now I've taken that trick from this guy, content ideas from this guy. All right, now I look at someone like Nigel Sylvester, the BMX rider who's gone straight into the fashion industry, has got to deal with Mercedes, Moncler, Beats, wow. Nike. He's got his own Jordan shoes. And I'm like, wow, I want to have elements of that journey in my life. So I need to make sure my brand is super clean and on point, and I'm, you know, I'm working with young people, I'm doing well, and I'm, you know, I'm working as an athlete too. So then I'm taking elements from him. So to answer your questions, there's not really one person I could tell you in particular. It would feel unfair to be like, yo, fair, this guy inspires me. No, that's fair enough.
Like a good mixture of influences. Yeah. Yeah. Although there's a few of the tricks that I've seen you doing that, especially with like the wheel out ones, and you did yeah. one with I don't know if it's a chain or a rope or something, you're like flipping the wheel up in the air, your friends, like a skipping rope trick thing. No, and it was obviously you were doing it like again and again yeah. and again. That really reminded me of like Tate Ross Kelly stuff, where you're just like, how do you even think of that?
He's incredible. So he's a big, so when it came to those tricks, 100%, he would have been a massive inspiration. And me and my best mate who we'd do it with, we'd be there scrolling his Instagram like, all right, cool, he's bounced his wheel like this, let's try and bounce it like this, or let's do it together. Like, let's mm-hmm. add a person. So it's like, that was a prime example of the kind of mindset I have. It's like, all right, we saw that, but like, all right, cool. I love it. Looks interesting, looks fun, but how can I add my own bike life twist to it? Mm-hmm. And then for me, that means I've always kept my style unique. I've always been an innovator in my riding and content within the scene, because yeah, you're taking the best bits from everyone and trying to do it yourself. So, yeah.
And so obviously there's loads of effort and like trying again and again and again to get something to come together with some of the tricks.
Yeah.
But before that, before you get on the bike, is there yeah. also like gym time and training as well? Or is it just wheelies and swerves and you just get out there and play?
So up until last year, it was wheelies and swerves and just get out there and play. But with a serious kind of tone to it, though. Do you know what I mean? There's certain days where, cool, we just go out and have fun and we ride into London, we get something to eat and we pop some wheelies, have fun and go home. But there are other days where it's like, okay, we're going to go to Alexandra Palace, which is the big hill, and mm-hmm. it's a really steep road. And we'd ride, we'd do tricks down it, ride up it, tricks down. We'd be there the whole afternoon, 4 or 5 hours. So there were days where we'd, you know, focus on progression of tricks rather than let's just ride through the roads and have a bunch of fun. Mm-hmm. Until last year I started training though. I started to take, you know, switch into more of an athlete mindset, because I'm like, all right, cool, I've progressed so much trick-wise and how I ride my bike. But now, like, once again, it's like all these professional athletes that I look up to, they all train in the gym. Mm-hmm. Why am I not training in the gym? Will training in the gym improve my riding? That's then a question I haven't got an answer to. I had to find out. So I've started training in a gym last year, and now I'm just focusing on calisthenics now. and no, not in the gym. So I did gym work for a year. Now I'm doing calisthenics. And luckily, right down the road from my house, I've got a beer, like a mini pump track right next to a calisthenics park. So I'll be training and riding every morning for an hour or two. I ride the track and train, and then I start my day.
Well, if you know, even if it doesn't make your bike riding better, it should reduce your injuries.
Exactly. But to be honest, I felt it improve my riding in a sense. Like when it comes to 180s and doing like big hop tricks or jumping up ledges, like my explosive power and stuff that I now have is definitely 100% improved a bit. 100%. And I feel a bit lighter. I was a bit chubbier because we'd be riding, just eating fast food and all that. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, to kind of have a bit more of an athlete mindset. I don't know, you feel happier as a person. I think you just feel, you know, even if you do nothing for the rest of the day, you've still done something. So yeah, it's never a bad thing to go out and train.
And how much off-road riding do you do? Do you ever? Well, I know that you do a bit because I've seen you at Chicksands. But
I'm getting into it more and more. How do I say this? I don't want to be a wheelie kid forever. Do you know what I mean? I don't even look at myself as a wheelie kid because I've got so many different things going on now. But on the outside, a lot of people will look at me as, oh, he's a wheelie kid or whatever. And like mountain biking, I've always wanted to do mountain biking. But when I was young, I'm not saying like my parents wouldn't have supported that and helped make that happen, because I was blessed to have really supportive parents, so they probably would. But it wasn't even like an option. That, and then also the bikes were just way too expensive as well to kind of get into it, so yeah, maybe they wouldn't have supported the expensive bike, but they would have taken me mountain biking, but it just wasn't even an option, right? So now where I'm blessed enough to kind of have my own van, so I literally bought a van, I bought a mountain bike, and I've started going at it a bit more this year. But I am looking to take it a lot more seriously soon. Like I am looking to kind of really start dedicating a lot of time to it, like soon. And really, I really want to race a mountain bike race and do well.
I want to compete. Watch out, you've got all the skills. So.
Yeah, I'm coming. And I think it would be interesting just to see how and if my skills transfer over from riding on the streets, because I've got all the little bunny hops, I've got fast reactions, you know, I'm good at dodging past poles and cars and whatnot. So there's elements where I'm not coming in completely oblivious to how to do this and oblivious to the skills and the tricks I need. You know, I've got a little bit of a starting platform that
definitely
hopefully I can elevate from.
You just need to figure out which bits of mud are slippy and which rocks are slippy and that kind of stuff, don't you?
For me, one of the biggest mental challenges I've found with mountain biking in the bits that the few bits I've done is trusting the tires that they're going to grip on those corners, because for me I ride fixed slicks which have absolutely no grip on the tires at all. They're completely slick tires. And I've ride them on the streets with no loose floor and no bank turns. So then when I'm flying out of turn, that's loose mud. And I have to trust these tires to not slip. That's the bit that I find myself having to get over mentally.
Yeah. I think we're all still struggling with that, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, good. I didn't know if that was just a me thing coming from street riding, because I see guys absolutely pinning it around these turns and I'm like, my head is like, you're gonna go flying.
Yeah, the bit that gets me is the line, like the gap between the center tread and the side tread, and the idea that you've actually got to lean it further to catch that side tread. And there's actually like a gap between where you have less grip if you don't go hard enough, kind of thing.
I don't know this stuff. Freaks me out. No, but I've never even heard that stuff. So,
you should go and ride slick rock in Moab, because all your slick tires there would grip beautifully.
Moab. Where is that, in Utah?
In Utah, yeah, because you were out there.
I was there last year. Yeah. But worst thing is, when I flew out there, I put I brung my mountain bike and my C100. I brung both bikes, but for some reason, I put different wheels in each bag.
Right.
And then only one bag came, so I only had half my mountain bike.
But I saw you still managed to ride it. You just rode around with no front wheel.
Yeah, literally.
So that was one of the things I wanted to ask. What bike was that? Because that's a full suspension bike.
Yeah, so that bike is it's custom 101. Brand is unknown.
Oh.
Oh, we keep it a mystery. It's a
secret bike.
Jake 100 special. Let's just say we'll keep it at that one.
Okay, I was wondering whether Collective were prototyping a full suspension.
Potentially, bike. I can't say too much. Put it this way. I'll say this. There's talks about supporting me. Whether it's them or whoever, there's talks of people supporting my mountain bike journey and kind of really getting behind me to kind of help me. Mm-hmm. Get into downhill racing, basically. So I'm hoping, hopefully if I can work out and learn to organize my life and bike storms and everything else and my clothing line and everything else I've got going on, mm-hmm. I'm hoping to really dedicate and then give it my all mountain biking, and I should have some good support, hopefully. So
because you said you don't want a bike to cost more than £1,000, and that £1,000 full suspension bike, like, there's a gap in the market there at the minute, because they used to be the boss nut, the Calibre boss nut, and then that's kind of dropped out, and so there's a gap in the market there for that, like, entry level, accessible to loads of people.
It's interesting. That's why you said it. Yeah, because obviously I know my mountain bike's going to need to cost more than a grand. It's not going to suffice to what I'm trying to put it through if it's costing less than a grand. But that is a good idea.
It was amazing. So I live near, not so far from Leeds Urban Bike Park.
Yeah.
And you could go there. And there were loads of people on these Calibre boss nuts as their first suspension bike. And it's like super heartwarming to see.
Collective, they need to get on it. They need to get on it. And with me going into mountain biking, I obviously want to try and, when I can, bring the community along with me. You know, mm-hmm. So there's talks and stuff that I was talking about it with Nay and whatnot, about, like, how can we set up a project where we get a coach and we take 30 kids from London to Bike Park Wales, and we have them stay there from Friday till Sunday, and we let them go on the trails, and we give them this experience that, you know, you would never get being from London, and open their eyes to, you know, this other side of mountain biking, and mm-hmm. better their skills and better their understanding, and also build a connection between the two cultures, because I feel like there's still a bit of a misunderstanding at times between cultures and stuff. So hopefully I can kind of really get dug in on the mountain bike stuff. So
cool.
We'll see how it goes.
Now, you obviously went out to Rampage to watch that, which I'm very jealous of, because I really want to go. I was supposed to go last year. I didn't get there. I'm trying to get there this year.
Yeah.
You were like talking about the risk and reward of Rampage. And it seems like your 100 kilometre an hour wheeling has a fairly like stiff risk-reward ratio going on there. So what kind of thing do you prefer? Do you prefer the, like, skillful, artful tricks, or does the risk-reward thing?
As in personally for me to do or for me to watch?
For you to do.
Personally, for me, my favourite stuff is it really revolves around speed. So it's like, for me, the faster I go on my bike, the more dangerous that is, the bigger, the steeper the hill I could find. You know, San Francisco is one of my favorite places, because you're bombing down these hills, you've got to get your friends to stop the junction at the bottom, but there might be a car coming past and stuff. So for me, that side of things, I think just because it's also what I'm good at, it's also kind of part of my style that really stands out in my riding, is how fast I go when I do everything. But then when it comes to aesthetically, like going to Rampage and watching that stuff, it really takes your breath away, kind of watching that and seeing it in real life. So honestly, I would love to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. It would be my dream. I'd much rather be able to jump off that massive cliff than go 100 kilometers an hour doing a manual. Like, as fun as the manual is and as crazy as it was, and that whole trip was a blast, like the rampage start, it's next level, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
It's next level, so.
Yeah, watch those knees if you're working on those tricks.
Not the okay. Knees.
Well, so we've been super positive in all the chat first so far, but I think there is always a sad point in anyone's bike career. And what was the first bike you had stolen?
My first bike I had stolen was a little Mongoose BMX. Left outside
of shore.
Everyone
remembers it. Everyone remembers
their first bike. Yeah, that got stolen. Yeah, it was a little Mongoose BMX. Got stolen outside, just outside my local corner shop.
Yeah.
Just left it outside like an idiot, got stolen. And then the bike ended up on one of my friend's road, but it was all sprayed gold, tires, rims, bars, frame. And we got it back in the end, but yeah, it was a gold bike. Yeah.
Well, at least you were reunited.
Yeah, I got a fresh paint job as well, so yeah, I couldn't complain. Yeah.
And so you obviously grew up in East London where I think things like storing a bike can be a barrier to access. Like, not everyone's got a garden and a shed and a garage and stuff like that. So do you think, like, obviously you're very young, but even in your lifetime there has been stuff done in London to improve bike infrastructure. So do you think it's got better, or do you think there are still just as many barriers to getting on a bike?
Well, I think there's as many barriers still, but I feel like the barriers for entry develop as well as them trying to take it away, it also develops as well. So like, obviously they've added all the cycle lanes and all the kind of one-way street systems for the bikes, and you've got little bike lock things on your road, but I don't see that actively encouraging people to start riding. To be fair though, the cycle lanes, to be fair, for you know, people, not kids, not trying to get into wheeling and stuff, you know, just the average kind of commuter and whatnot, I feel like the bike lanes have increased that over the years. From the stats that I've seen, it has increased riding. Honestly though, the best thing for the cycling infrastructure in London was lockdown.
Right.
Like, it was COVID, to be honest. You never saw more people riding bikes just before, just after COVID. I never sold as many bikes as I did. So, yeah, I'm not too sure. But I feel there's always barriers, and they're always trying to do things. But I don't know. I think it's deeper than that.
Well, as I often think that the best way to get into bikes is to discover the fun of bikes.
Right.
And like, infrastructure is the sort of the stuff that comes next. Like, once you've already realised that you quite like riding a bike, then you want to go somewhere on it. But you've got to have places where you can play as a kid.
Yeah.
Like a safe space that's traffic free and you know, like pump tracks are brilliant examples of the kind of infrastructure that do that. So but then a lot of the like wheelie bike coverage that you get is, oh my god, look at them riding so close to buses or whatever, or you're riding on a station fork, like a train station outside the train station stuff. So I wonder how much kind of conflict you experience when you're out riding.
So honestly, it's a good point, because it's sad, because if anything, I hadn't thought about that point about like the whole safe place for like young people who want to have fun on the bike. Mm-hmm. If anything, those places have been taken away. You know, the skate park I grew up at got knocked down last year, completely knocked down. And that was the one that got me into riding and gave me a place to go every day rather than chilling on the local estate or in the park with my friends smoking weed. You know, we could go to the skate parks, and this place like that got knocked down, which is actually really sad to see. But yeah, like, day to day and riding now, like that platform that outside the train station, Puddingmill Lane, where we ride in Stratford.
Yep.
Zero conflict.
Oh, that's good.
If anything, I've had the council reach out to me saying it's amazing to see so many people go there on bikes. Is there anything we can do to support or help? So it's nice that we've turned a point in our culture where people understand how positive the councils, people, the media, everyone now understands how positive and how key our culture and community is for a lot of young people. So that platform in Stratford, outside the station that we ran, we have absolutely zero trouble. We'll have police coming onto the platform and filming clips to show their kids or whatever of us doing tricks with no front wheel. We had police coming up to us in lockdown. I'd spent most of my lockdown was spent there. One of my lockdowns was right. I've spent more time there than at home probably. I was there all night, every single night, riding, practicing. And police would come up, they would call us tricks, they'd, oh, we saw you guys yesterday, you're here again. Like, we actually had no problem. And then I think when it comes to the road riding, you know, and touching on the point about, like, you know, young people getting close to cars and all that stuff, and that can obviously potentially cause conflict. But I think in London, especially, I think in some of the rural villages, you might get a bit of a different reaction because it's a different culture. There's less things going on. But in London, it's like, you see us and we're gone. You know what I mean? By the time you're even mad at us, you're still sitting in traffic. You know what I mean? Like, we're down the road, around the corner, getting a drink at a shop, and you're still like, wait,
that's one of our greatest pleasures, isn't it? Riding past the traffic jam.
Right? And people just being mad that you're on a bike, but like, you're never going to see me again. I'm already gone. So you might as well. So I think, like, honestly, like, back in the day when we first started riding and we was riding around London, there was a bit more, like, clashing of, not heads, but like the police didn't understand it. So we'd get stopped week in, week out, stop and searched, because they thought 10 kids riding around in tracksuits doing wheelies, oh, they must be thieves. They must be they must be stealing phones. They must be on stolen bikes. Like, that was all they thought at that time, back in the day. The media, we had newspaper articles. Gang of hooded youths terrorizing the streets. And we're like, what? Like, for us, it was a whole, like, it was like, that was like the complete opposite of how we were looking at it, right? And honestly, it was those situations that made me start doing vlogs on YouTube. Because vlogs for me was the only way I could get out our perspective. Right. We haven't got a newspaper that writes to the whole country, but I can have a YouTube video that can potentially go out to the whole country now. So we can now show how much fun we're having. We can show why we're doing it. We can talk about it. We can, you know, explain situations. We can show our skills off. And that's literally why I started YouTube. And honestly, now the love and support we get as riders in the city, I would say is 80% positive, 85% positive to 15% negative. And even then, I wouldn't even know if we're getting negative support. You don't, like, because as I said, by the time you see us and you're annoyed at us, we're gone already. Right. You know, so we don't even have that situation. But I'd be lying if, you know, we didn't have a car driver shout at us every now and then, or, you know, police tell us to chill out a little bit. But day to day, yeah,
we all, like, get that on crazy. Our way to work anyway, whether we're commuting or we're out on our mountain bikes. Yeah, well, maybe there are some lessons. That's interesting, that, like, putting your story out there in your words, and
that
was, like,
why I started vlogging.
Yeah,
completely. Mm. Like, hands down, 100% the reason why I started vlogging, because I saw these articles and I was like, nah, it's not fair. Like, that is literally, as I said, like, I didn't even think that was a way, like, that was a possibility for a newspaper to write. Like, I never expected up to be in a newspaper for a bad reason. Do you know what I mean? So I'm like, what? So yeah, we started vlogging and doing these challenges, and then that's when we built a massive audience, and that's when everything kind of took off and led to the Nike deal and whatnot that I had and stuff. And yeah, even touching on that, I was doing research online, because I'm creating all these decks and presentations about Bikestorm, so I can reach out to brands and talk to the brands and, you know, get some support. And I found this article online from the police, a report. I think it came out a year or so ago. And it was actually a report about what they called bike storming, is what they called us lot wheeling through London. They called it bike storming. The groups of young people bike storming and skateboarding in the city. And it was a report literally saying how the police turn a blind eye when they see it. when they see kids wheeling and whatnot. And it was due to the fact that the police understand how positive and how good it is for these young people to, you know, get out of the area, go into central London and do that. And the police also admitted that as much as you might see these negative comments online or complaints, none of them are turning into 999 phone calls. None of them are turning into, yo, this kid just smashed my mirror or hit my car, or this kid just hit someone, or he stopped. Like, none of those complaints or negative comments you see online are actually turning into, yeah, 999 calls or anyone actually taking action.
Yeah.
So then, which then also reinforces why I take all those negative comments with a pinch of salt. Like, mate, you could be anywhere in the world, never experienced, never learned, never watched any one of my vlogs, and you've commented that. Like, how can I, you know, accept that as a negative comment? I can't. I just look past it, you know. That's
So, well, on your island that we're going to send you off to.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah, you get to choose your island. You get to design it and play.
Oh,
God.
No. Okay. Yeah.
So you said you're going to go in for mountain biking, but then are you going to leave the tarmac behind? Are you going to have an urban island? Like, what are you going to design? What's it going to look like?
Damn, that's a hard question. I would, honestly, my island, first off, I'd call it Hondo HQ, because it's Jake 100's HQ. It's going to be my headquarters for the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to, you know.
Is this going to be Bond villain kind of island, or Tracy Island?
No, I think mine would be a mix of, you know, it will have some Bond villain elements, but I would say in a positive way, you know, in a welcoming, you know, nice looking way. I would definitely have some trails though, 100% have some trails.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have a dirt drop, like a dirt jump line that I would just build bigger and bigger each week. So I had to go bigger. Next thing you know, I'm doing them 100-foot jumps, hopefully, hardline style. Would I have can I have tarmac and dirt jumps?
You can, yeah.
Oh my God, I'm having tarmac, but I'm using all the sand on my desert island and building it in a slant so my tarmac can be slightly downhill. Okay. And I can have a nice little downhill strip on it. Downhill tarmac strip with a nice corner at the bottom for me to like swerve around. Some dirt jumps and like a half pipe.
Okay.
I think I'd be good to go. Okay. Yeah. And then obviously a C100.
Oh, we'll come on to that. So,
okay, cool.
You said you'd want to be able to dig your dirt jump bigger every week. So I think that probably answers my question, which is you can have someone go and build everything for you, or you can build your own. And you're saying you'd like to build your own.
What? Does that person who builds them for me live on the island with me?
No, that's it. And they build it, and then that's it. You're stuck with it. That's it. You can't change it. But all the effort of building is gone, and you just have to ride.
But I'm like, oh, nah. I'd rather just have no contact and just freestyle myself, I think. And because then it's yours, you know. You can be proud of it after. You can, you know, you can fuck it up and it doesn't matter. Like, oh, I swore, sorry, if that's not allowed. But, yeah, I think I'd just freestyle. But, yeah, tarmac strip, slightly downhill. That would be first, number one priority would be that, with a nice little flat corner at the bottom. Perfect. Yeah, like okay. not cambered, it's gonna be flat.
See, you're gonna have to learn some berms in mountain biking, because flat corners are usually our enemy. And
yeah, not good, right? Yeah, that's what I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's why
you learn the berms, then you're gonna burn us all.
hopefully.
So is there a bike that you have lusted after but never actually owned?
Oh yeah, pretty much any e-bike.
Oh,
yo, I just want an e-bike, a full suspension e-bike, downhill e-bike, whatever it is. I just want one, to be honest. I lost over them. Yes, few of them, a couple different ones. I just want one, you know. I went riding with Windmasters one time.
Mm-hmm.
In the south of England somewhere, mountain biking. This was a couple years back. And he was just... Wait, he wasn't even on the e-bike. But I've rode one of his e-bikes. But I just remember that day he wasn't. He's so fit. What the? He's so fit. Like, he was just absolutely smashing these hills. But yeah, I've rode a couple e-bikes. I've rode one of his e-bikes before. And just going mountain biking with an e-bike, I think it looks like a game changer, to be honest. So
it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know which e-bike I'd want specifically. I just want a fast one that isn't too heavy. Yeah, any e-bike really.
Okay. Well, hold that thought, because we're going to come to bikes again in a moment. But you're going to have a lot of time on your hands on this island all by yourself.
No. Yeah.
So what skill do you think you might learn? It doesn't have to be a bike skill, but how are you going to fill your time?
What skill? I think bike skill-wise, if I want to learn bike skill, that's why I said the jumps, and I'd make them bigger each week, because I think that's where one of my weak points, especially when it comes to the mountain biking and the dirt riding, is the gap jumps.
Yeah.
I'm still not the biggest fan of them. So, like, that's why if I have my own desert island and I'm there on my own with nothing to do, I can just build a small gap jump and just make it bigger each week, just dig out the middle, make it a bit bigger each week. So I'd definitely learn that. And another skill, what would I learn? I guess I'd have to learn bike mechanics without any tools, right? Because
if my bike's broken,
I'll get a mechanic.
To do once a year, they'll come and visit.
Wow.
And you can choose something.
I can choose my mechanic as well?
They'll do one task for you.
I can choose my mechanic as well?
Yeah, but they're not going to live there, so you can chat to them briefly, but then they're going to have to go away again.
That's cool. Bike Shack. My guy, Bike Shack Layton, plug him in. Best bike shop in East London, maybe even the whole of London. I'd have him come down and then fix my bike for sure. But what skill? I don't know what other skill I'd learn. I feel like I'd have to be on the island and in the situation to understand what skills I need. I guess I'd need to like climb trees so I could get like food and stuff.
Right.
Or I'd have to learn how to make a vial out of like whatever that thing is, that
stick thing. So some kind of like
survival skills.
Survival skills.
I'm trying to ride my bike for the rest of my life, Hannah, so I'm gonna need to survive on this island to be able to do that. So
okay,
just survival skills.
Now
unless you're gonna send me a chef as well, then
no you're gonna be stuck there.
Okay. Just the
so you only get to take one bike to the island to ride forevermore. Now, you have just expressed quite a strong desire for an e-bike.
Yeah.
But what, you've also said quite a strong desire for the C100. So, what are you going to choose for one bike forevermore?
How much time do I have? Oh, yeah, the gap jumps of the C100 is not the best. How much time do I have to prepare my bike before I go to this desert island though?
You can have the bike like sweet. It will be exactly as you want. It could be a bike of an imaginary bike of the future.
I think I'd make the first ever or second ever, because there has been one before, electric C100.
Yeah
we'd make an electric one and take it over there for sure.
Okay,
I think so, because then it's the best of both worlds, right? Like, got the e-bike.
But it'd be a hardtail. It would still be a hardtail, wouldn't it?
That's fine though. We just
your poor knees. Those gaps.
We make do. Nah, because I'm gonna land them so cleanly, so smoothly. My knees won't even feel a thing.
I love your optimism.
Hell yeah! Oh, I'm gonna be there for the rest of my life. So
your next thing you get to choose is a book to take with you. I'm tempted to say it should be like Knee Surgery 101 or something. what book would you take?
Like a book or a magazine?
Mm-hmm.
There's just one magazine I would definitely take. Obviously, Single Track World, you know.
well done. We're going to give you that one anyway. So
okay, cool. So I get one day mechanic, a year subscription.
Lifetime subscription. So you keep getting to see what's happening in the rest of the world.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
And then one other book. Ooh, that's a hard question. You know, I can't remember the last time I read a book. Much like that probably sounds so bad. Honestly, do you know what? I'd take a colouring book.
A colouring book.
Yeah, because wait, look.
Pass the time.
Yeah, pass the time. You can create your own story with it. You know, you'd have to find things on the island to make those colours, because unless you're going to give me paint as well, I'm just chancing my luck here, or colouring pens. But I'd get a colouring book, yeah. I mean, it's nice and simple, you know, you can, yeah.
And you can also take one album with you. I know you're too young to actually do albums, really, but you
pretty
can't
much,
take
yeah.
Spotify, so I'm afraid you're going to have to narrow it down.
Music album. I was there thinking a photo album. music album. Oh, damn. Oh my God, I don't know. Who listens to albums anymore?
Exactly, I know.
That's like a CD, right? An album. I'm having a quick look on my Spotify to see what's up there. I'd be going for like a Burna Boy album, because it's like good vibes on the island. Burna Boy, I think it'd be a nice vibe.
Okay.
It's kind of Afro style-ish.
I'm glad you're describing it, because I have absolutely no idea.
Oh, it's good. No, it's good music. It's good. It's like, it's very nice. It's not like, it's not rap or anything. It's kind of like a bit of a mix of like kind of Afrobeats-ish style. It's a good vibe. Yeah. Upbeat, very positive, good energy, you know. And I think that's key for the music that you're going to listen to for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
So...
Well, you're making me feel quite old at this point already, but
no.
the clothing and trainer sponsor that you have, beginning with an N, how do you pronounce it?
Nike.
Thank you. I pronounce it Nike, and every time I say it, my kids go, "It's Nike."
So it's not Nike.
I'm going to tell them.
Yeah,
I spoke
you can tell
to a
them.
Nike sponsored athlete.
Yeah, well, sadly, not anymore sponsored. But we was for 3 years, and it was the best, greatest 3 years. And I'm happy to not be on them. I'm happy that I was on them. I'm sad I'm not on it. Whatever. It was a great time. But it is Nike, 100% Nike. Because when I would do adverts or any videos for them, and I'd have to be like, yeah, so Nike, they'd be like, cut, redo. It's Nike. I have to say. Even in like podcasts like this, like when I was signed to them, I had to say Nike. Like they were like on it with me, like it's Nike.
I'm gonna tell my kids I am right.
You can officially say, yeah. And it's official as well, like genuine official. Yeah.
Oh well, last question then. Oh, you can take one luxury item with you. You can't use it to help you escape from the island. So no paddle boards and no communicating with the rest of the world either. No mobile phones.
One luxury item.
Yeah.
The listeners can't see this, but I'm showing you. But I will explain what it is. I'll take my good friend here, Dora, right here.
Okay.
It's a door.
It's a door with eyes and a face.
I guess it identifies as a woman in a sense, but like it's a door. We call her Dora. And it's been a key part of bike life. It's got a lot of fans, this door. This door's pretty famous. And we put it up in any location we want, and it's then an obstacle for the kids to swerve. So if I'm lucky, you know, I can bring that item and I have an extra obstacle for my downhill concrete tarmac strip on my desert island. I can have a door at the bottom that I can, you know, get around. And then if anyone ever does come and visit, we have something, you know, a door with. And, you know, you could probably use it for many other things too. So
you could pretend that there was a portal to another world on the other side of it.
I could just pretend I had some privacy on my island, just put a door, you know. But yeah, that door is... I think the door, you know, because any other luxury item, you're gonna have it, and if it's any some sort of luxury, you're gonna want more of that, or you're gonna want to develop off that. But a door, like, you're gonna just be happy with it, innit? Like, it's a simple door. I can keep adding artwork to it. I can just keep making it look better. I can, you know, with the coloring pens that I'm hoping you give me with my coloring book, you know.
You persuade me, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So the door and the coloring book need the pens.
So. I sound like such a little kid. I said a door. My two items would be a door and a coloring book. Yeah, I don't know. Otherwise, though, what have other people said for luxury item?
Some people want like woodworking tools and stuff because loads of people have said they want to like learn to make stuff out of wood.
Boring.
But I applaud your like, yeah, if you have luxury, just want more, just be happy with what you've got. Kind of, that's a very nice philosophical outlook on life.
It's just simple then as well, because it's like, well, cool, just deal with what I've got. But if I've got something that, you know, that might break or thing, or I'm going to want a better saw when my one gets weak or something. No, I just got a door, innit? Like, what more do you want? What less do you want? Probably
not. Well, in that case, I think it's just about time that you go and build that electric C-100 because the ship is coming in to take out the door off to your desert islands. Thank you very much for chatting to us before you go.
It's been a pleasure, and I'm hoping you come and visit one day when you bring me my lifelong subscription. Hopefully you hand deliver each one.
Oh, I hand deliver. That's what I'm expecting. Okay, we'll see.
Perfect.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.